Up everyone, this is your boy DJ Hamilton, and welcome to another episode of the DJ Sports Show. In this episode, we're going to get into the NBA Awards overview. We're going to go over the awards. They announced the All-NBA teams this past week. We're going to go over the All-NBA teams, all defensive teams. We're going to go through all of the awards. And then, man, this is so much talent in the NBA, it's crazy. We're also going to get into the NFL Week 2 takeaways, and man, were there so many injuries this past weekend. Let's get right into the show. So let's go over all the NBA awards now. Now that every award has been announced and we know the winner of each awards and all the NBA teams, we're now going to go over them. So the first award I want to talk about, first we're going to announce the award winners. So the winner of the Rookie of the Year was Ja Morant. Sixth Man of the Year, Montrezl Harrell. Most Improved Player, Brandon Ingram. Coach of the Year, Nick Nurse. And Giannis Antetokounmpo won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. To me, Ja Morant, let's do Sixth Man of the Year. Montrezl Harrell, he had a good season, solid off the bench. He's a very integral part of that Clippers team, even though they really disappointed this season by getting bounced out the second round and blowing a 3-1 lead. But nonetheless, he had a great season. He provided a spark off the bench for them. He gets a double-double machine any given night. And hopefully next season they do better and reach their expectations, at least get to the conference finals. But the West is going to be better next year, so it's going to be interesting to see. They have two Sixth Man of the Year award winners now in Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell on their team. And they have two perennial All-Stars, and hopefully they put it all together next season because they really disappointed this season. Rookie of the Year, Ja Morant. This was an easy one. Zion Williamson was hurt for a majority of the year, only playing 24-25 games. And Ja Morant stood out from the very beginning, killing on all cylinders. He had other guys like Kendrick Nunn who had good rookie seasons and Tyler Hero. But none of those guys could challenge Ja Morant for Rookie of the Year. It wasn't even close. Only person who could challenge him was Zion Williamson, and he was out for more than half the season. So it was kind of a clear-gone conclusion who was going to win the award. Most Improved Player, Brandon Ingram. He really made that leap. From a guy with potential who became a star in the NBA. And after getting traded from the Lakers to the Pelicans, and he really has shown he could be a real star in this league. He's still only 20. He just turned 23 years old. He's so young. People forget how young he is. When he entered the NBA draft, he wasn't even 19 yet. He was 18. That's how young he is. He has so much time to improve his game, and he could be one of the better players in the league if he continues to make improvements to his game over the next decade plus. He could be one of the best scorers in the league for the next decade or so. It's just up to him if he's willing to put the work in and get better. He could be one of the great players in this league if he wants it. Him and Zion Williamson can make a scary duo. And I only expect to continue to see him improve. Another guy who I think could have consideration for this award is Luka Doncic. He won Rookie of the Year last year. Yeah, I get that, 20 points. But he went from Rookie of the Year last year to averaging almost 30 points a game this season and making All-NBA first team in his second season. Think about that. And he just turned 21 in February. So he was 20 for the majority of the season, and he just turned 21. Think about that, how young he is. He's one of the youngest players to... I think he, along with LeBron James, to reach All-NBA first team in his second season. Like, the dudes can make history. He's breaking records. He's making history. I wouldn't have mind if he won the award over Brandon Ingram, too, but I'll give it to Brandon Ingram. Another guy who also had a consideration is Bam Adebayo, because he made the jump from last season to becoming an All-Star this season and making All-Defense, the All-Defensive team. So, and he has really been an integral part for the Miami Heat and that team, helping them reach the conference finals and being a defensive force, especially game one of the conference finals. He had that big block on Jason Tatum. Only shows the amount of improvement he's made on both sides of the floor, and to see how much more he can improve. I feel like his offensive game can get better. There's always room for improvement, but I feel like defensively he's ahead of where he's at offensively right now. But if he continues to take that next step, he could be one of the better bigs in the league. He already is one of the better bigs in the league now, but if he takes that next step offensively, I think he could be in the same class as AD, maybe. AD and Embiid. But he has to take the next step offensively, like averaging over 23 points a game with double-digit rebounds, two blocks, stuff like that. Because he and Jimmy Butler are the two best players on that team. But yeah, Brandon Ingram won the Most Improved Player Award, and he's well-deserved. His scoring average jumped like 6-7 points. He improved his assists per game, rebounds, everything. Coach of the Year, Nick Nurse. After losing Kawhi Leonard, he left in free agency to go to the Clippers after they won a championship against the Warriors in 6 games. Nobody thought the Raptors would be as good as they turned out to be this season, and they forced the Celtics to 7 games in the season, and they had the second best record in the East. So that shows what kind of coach Nick Nurse is. He's a hard coach. He's very detail-oriented, fundamentally sound, and he pushes his guys to their max potential, to their limit, to get the most out of his players. And that's why they had the second best record in the East. And I thought they had no business being a top 3 team in the East this year. So that shows what kind of coach he is, pushing and getting the best out of his players. And Giannis won Defense Player of the Year and MVP. Giannis won Defense Player of the Year over Anthony Davis and Rudy Gobert. He was the best defensive player on the best defensive team. You could make an argument for Anthony Davis. Rudy Gobert, I don't think, deserved it this year. He's good, but he can't guard multiple positions like Giannis and AD can. Those guys are just as good of defenders as him, if not better at protecting the rim. Like Rudy Gobert, two-time defensive player, he's great, but those two guys could guard literally the point guard to center position if asked to. And he did, and Giannis did just that. Winning his first defensive player of the year and winning MVP in the same season puts him in the same breath as Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon. He wins his second straight MVP, back-to-back MVP, and he's one of a few players in NBA history of over 1,000 players, thousands of players, to win back-to-back MVP. Those players, there's a very short list, includes Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Steve Nash, Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Moses Malone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, as the only players in NBA history to ever win back-to-back MVPs. He received 85 of the 101 first-place votes and earned 962 total votes from a global panel of 100 sports writers and broadcasters. LeBron James received the other 16 first-place votes and finished in second place with 753 points. James Harden finished with 367 points in the MVP race and finished third. Luka Doncic finished fourth with 200 points, and LA Clippers forward Kawhi Leonard finished with 168 points. He joins Michael Jordan, who did it in 1987-88 season, and Hakeem Olajuwon as the only player to win MVP and Defensive Player of the Awards in the same season. He's in select company. He can still get so much better. He still has so much more to add to his game because he still needs to work on his post game and his jump shot, his mid-range game and three-pointer. If he adds those to his game, he has a chance to be one of the and add some championships to his resume. If he does those two things, add those things to his game and some championships, he's top 10 all time. He's too unique a talent, and to see the growth he's had on his game, the exponential growth each year, it's just astounding to watch. Outstanding. You can make argument for LeBron winning it, leading the league in assists, doing what he did in year 17, averaging 25 points, doing and breaking records as always, and he made a NBA first team again for the 13th time and 16th time in total. We're going to get into that in the NBA teams in a second, but we're just going to talk about the awards right now. But yeah, man, Giannis, all those guys that just read who won back-to-back MVPs, all those guys are all-time greats and legends, and he joins that esteemed group of greats. And he's going to be up there. The only guy I'll probably put him over right now, he's not over Stephen Curry yet or LeBron. He's nowhere near LeBron level yet. All time, or Tim Duncan, or Jordan, or Bird, or Magic. He needs to win championships first. He's over Steve Nash to me. Steve Nash is great, but Giannis can impact the game on both ends of the floor. That's why I put him over Steve Nash for me. Now that he won the second MVP and a Defensive Player of the Year and All Defensive First Team again, you got to put him there, man. It's just he's an esteemed company, and it's rare. There's only 3 players who've done what he's done in the same season. And it's just outstanding to watch the growth this young man has gone through throughout his entire career. And he even stated that he doesn't want to be called an MVP until he takes home a championship. And hopefully he can one day, man. Because now that he's the only back-to-back MVP since in Bucks history since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, man. And that's something. But, yeah, Giannis won MVP by a large amount. But LeBron James had some comments about being, about not only not winning MVP, but the way the voting took place and how he only got 16 first-place votes. Here's what LeBron James had to say about the MVP voting.
Hey, LeBron, it's Dave. We spoke about the MVP award with you back in March, and you said it's not something that's ever motivated you. Your true motivation is trying to be considered the best ever. But when you see the results come out tonight and or today, knowing you've won it four times, but now you've come in second four times, what's that feeling like for you, and what did you think of the results?
Pissed me off. That's my true answer. It pissed me off because out of 101 votes, I got 16 first place votes. That's what pissed me off more than anything. Not saying that the winner wasn't deserving of the MVP, but that pissed me off. And I finished second a lot in my career, either from a championship. And now four times as an MVP, like I said, I never came into this league saying let me be an MVP or be a champion. I've always said I just want to get better and better every single day, and those things that take care of itself. There's some things that's just out of my hand, and some things you can't control. But it pissed me off.
I could really sense LeBron James' frustration in not winning the award because there are a lot of naysayers in the media and people saying, oh, he only, all those years he made it to the finals, eight straight finals, he was only doing it because he was in the Eastern Conference. And people like Skip Bayless were calling it the Leastern Conference, saying that he was only doing it because he was in the Eastern Conference, which many people believe is the easier conference to get to the finals in than the Western Conference, where you have to go through so many great players and great teams. But I could sense his frustration because now that he's on the Lakers, he's in the Western Conference. It's his second year there. He led the league in assists. He averaged over 25 a game in his 17th season. And here he is leading them to the best record in the Western Conference. Him and Anthony Davis leading his team to the best record in the Western Conference over teams like the Blazers, Damian Lillard, the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, over the Nuggets with Jokic, Murray, and so on and so forth. And they're pretty much saying you're nowhere near the best player in the league, that you didn't deserve this award. And that was, that's his fourth time finishing second. So, and LeBron James has, what, four MVPs? He probably should have six, seven MVPs. But hey, Michael Jordan, same thing. Michael Jordan probably could have won MVP more than five times, but they don't always give it to the best player. That's why I think it's kind of like Rachel Nichols stated, the host of The Jump. She stated how the NFL and NHL have all these different awards. The NBA needs to have a separate award for MVP and best player in the league for that year award. Like, the NFL has all these different awards to award guys for whatever they do for a given season. The NBA needs to add another award so it can bounce things out. But yeah, I feel like LeBron, I feel his frustration and I feel where he's coming from. He's been the face of the league for how long and he's still doing it at a high level. And so I really feel his frustration and I feel for you, LeBron. He should not get disrespected like that. And I feel like whoever votes through this MVP voting, I feel like some of these people don't really watch basketball because it shouldn't have been that big of a landslide. Giannis had a great season, yes. Yes, his numbers were better, but I don't feel like he really improved anything in his game. His handles could still get tighter and quicker. His shot mid-range game didn't get better, and his post-game didn't get better. His numbers were just better, but he needs to add skill to his game more. I don't think it should have been 85 votes out of 101 for Giannis. I think it should have been more like 60 to 41 Giannis, or however you want to put it. And if LeBron won it, I would have had no problem with it because he led his team to the best record in the entire Western Conference, which is not easy to say. So, big props to him, man. Leading his team to the best record in the Western Conference over teams like the Houston Rockets with James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Utah Jazz with Donovan Mitchell,
and so on and so forth. Big props to LeBron James, and put respect on the King's name. But now, let's get quickly into the all-rookie teams. So the all-rookie of second team, I'm just going to say the second team first. You had guard Tyler Hero, the Raptors guard Terrence Davis, Bulls guard Kobe White, and Hornets forward P.J. Washington, Washington Wizards forward Rui Hachimura. And the first team, we had Brandon Clark, forward of the Memphis Grizzlies, Miami Heat guard Kendrick Nunn, New Orleans Pelicans highly hyped rookie Zion Williamson, forward of the Golden State Warriors Eric Pascal, and unanimous all-rookie team member, first team, Ja Morant, and rookie of the year winner. I don't have a problem with these teams. This year's rookie class was pretty good. It's not a deep class. It's more top heavy. It wasn't a strong draft by any means, but with the likes of Ja Morant coming to league, killing it, looking like a young D Rose mixed with Westbrook and some Kyrie in him, the way he's so explosive off the bounce, great for his teammates. His shooting can stand to improve, and yes, he needs to get stronger, but he has a great feel for the game and a great love for the game that you can't teach in a young player. You can't teach that passion, the drive to want to be great. And he was deserving of the unanimous selection for all-rookie first team. Brandon Clark, his teammate, had a great season as well, averaging double digits for them and getting a couple getting rebounds for them and playing great defense, especially when Jaren Jackson was out. Miami Heat guard Kendrick Nunn, he played solid this season. He's a strong guard. He provides a spark off the bench for them, and he has really improved his shooting over the course of the season. Eric Pascal was a very important part for the Golden State Warriors offense, especially with a lot of their stars being out this season. I feel like he's kind of like Draymond in a way. He could rebound. He's not great at anything really, but he does everything solid. And you need guys like that on your team. He makes effort plays. He could rebound. He could shoot. And he's really going to be an integral part for their offense and their team going forward in the future. Kobe White had a good season, up and down season. We'll see how much better he gets. P.J. Washington had a solid season. Rui Hachimura, looks promising. Looks like he has potential. Terrence Davis, I feel like could be a good role player, maybe a great defender on the Raptors. And Tyler Hero for the Miami Heat, man, he hits clutch shots. He's shown it in the playoffs. And that boy can play, man. He can shoot it. He's proven he could be more than just a shooter in the league than everybody. He's kind of like Devin Booker in a way. Everybody thought he was just a shooter, but he's proven he's more than that. He can hit big-time shots. He rebounds for the Heat. He plays defense. Yes, he needs to get stronger, and there's always room for improvement, but he's really shown what he's capable of in just his first year in the league on a team that's in the Eastern Conference Finals, and he's a big reason why, so you got to give him credit. But, yeah, man, I don't have a problem with these all-rookie teams. Zion Williamson, highly hyped rookie. Yes, he's only played a few games, 25 games, 24 games. But, and man, in those 24, 25 games, man, he has really shown what he can do, man. And I'm really excited to see what he can do next season and the seasons to come. If he can stay healthy and get his body in shape now that he has a full offseason to get in shape and now that he has NBA experience. I want to see what he adds to his game. I like to see him add some shooting ability, post moves, get better at his weak hand, and get in better shape, chop 15 to 20 pounds. If he does that, sky's the limit. And work on his flexibility, which I'm hearing reports that he's working on his flexibility. And if he could, man, work on his flexibility and stuff like that, and work on how to land properly so he could avoid any major injuries to his knees and protect those knees, he's going to be one of the best players in the league for the next decade plus if he stays healthy. But yeah, guys, there's some great young talent that came in the league this year, and I feel like the guys that are really gonna really stand out, become the stars, are Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, and potentially Tyler Hero. So those are the all rookie teams, and it's gonna be exciting to see the development along the way. So now we're gonna do the all defensive teams. So there's two all defensive teams in basketball. First we're gonna do the second team. At the guard spots, we have Patrick Beverley of the Los Angeles Clippers, Eric Bledsoe of the Milwaukee Bucks. At the forward spots, we have Bam Adebayo of the Miami Heat, Kawhi Leonard of the Los Angeles Clippers, and Brook Lopez of the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't have a problem with this team. Patrick Beverley, yes, he might not be the best offensive player. We know that. He's not a scorer. He talks too much. A lot of people don't like him. And he might be a dirty defensive player. But he reminds me of the old school 80s and 90s players, how they used to hand check and play rough and try to gang your head. And I think he was bound to make at least one all-defensive team in his career. I honestly think he's kind of a dirty player sometimes. He might not be the best player, but he does get after it defensively and scrap for his team and make hustle plays. So I don't mind him. Eric Bledsoe, he doesn't really show up in the playoffs, but during the regular season, defensively, he does get after it and really disrupts passes, passing lanes, and gets in the lanes for the Milwaukee Bucks to help them lead and get a lot of fast break opportunities for Giannis and so on. So I don't mind him. Bam Adebayo, man. This guy has made so much improvement this season. He was in the top three voting for Most Improved Player of the Year award, and it shows. He made statistical jumps in so many major categories, points, rebounds, assists, blocks, everything. And he's a big part of why the Miami Heat are in the Eastern Conference Finals. You saw that big block he had on Jason Tatum in Game 1 in the Eastern Conference Finals, man, to win them the game? And that's one of the best blocks now in NBA history. That's the kind of potential he has, the kind of impact he has. He's like a bigger, more athletic Draymond Green. And he has improved his offense and still has more room to grow. And he can still grow defensively. But man, I wouldn't put a Defensive Player of the Year award in the future out of question. So you know what I mean? Like, he has a chance to win multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards. So keep on looking eye out for him, man. He has a chance to win multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards and be in the running for all defensive teams for years to come. Brook Lopez, he deserved to make this team because he's a great shot blocker. He's become a great sniper from three-point range over the last couple years. And man, he has really protected the rim for the Milwaukee Bucks. Especially when Giannis is not on the floor, he's their like second best shot blocker. Him and Giannis really protect that rim for that team. So he deserved to make the team. Now the first team. At the guard spots, we have Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics, Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers. The forward spots, we have Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks, reigning league MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. And we have Anthony Davis of the Los Angeles Lakers, who finished second in Defensive Player of the Year award voting. And Rudy Gobert, center of the Utah Jazz, who finished third in Defensive Player of the Year voting, and who's also a former two-time Defensive Player of the Year. Marcus Smart, let's get it. He's heart and soul of the Boston Celtics. He makes that team go. He has the fire and the passion. He's what Patrick Beverley is supposed to be. He's a way better version of Patrick Beverley, ladies and gentlemen. He can do everything Patrick Beverley does, but not as dirty. And he's a way better offensive player. He has really made himself into a serviceable three-point shooter and a guy you can rely on to give you 15 to 18 points a night off the bench. He could guard your best player. He could guard you through the 1-5. I see him guard guys from Kawhi to LeBron James to Steph Curry to Joel Embiid, so on and so forth. I see him guard all the stars from different shapes and sizes. He's like a smaller version of Draymond Green. He's that great defensively. He is very deserving of all defensive team. Ben Simmons. Yes, we know he can't shoot. Yes, he needs to get better offensively for them to take the next step. But man, defensively, and his passing and rebounding, he's special. He was one of the league leaders in steals. He's been one of the top defenders in the league for a while, since he came into the league. But he really took the next step this season, making the all-defensive first team. And then he saw the impact he had on the team. Look at how they did in the playoffs. They got swept by the Celtics. I believe if he played, maybe they would have still lost the series, but there was no way they would have got swept. And he most likely would have guarded Jason Tatum and made it hard for him to get his own shot off and made it hard for Jaylen Brown and others. So Ben Simmons is deserving of this team. Rudy Gobert, reigning two-time Defensive Player of the Year. He's mostly known for his shot blocking and rebounding and his defense, and he's really probably the best shot blocker in the entire NBA, so I have nothing else to say in regards to him. Giannis Antetokounmpo, like Anthony Davis as well. This goes for both of them. They both can guard literally every position, the 1-5, very well. They can guard the pick and roll very well, the pick and pop, everything, you name it. They can get on open shooters. They know how to make switches very well. and get out on them and make it tough for them. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, he led his team. He was the best defensive player on the best defensive team this season. And I believe that's why he won the award. And he was very deserving. But I wouldn't have minded at all if Anthony Davis won the award. Anthony Davis is the only guy I've seen guard two guys on the pick and roll at the same time. Watch a video. Look it up on YouTube. He's literally the only, even Max Kellerman said it on one of the co-hosts of the First Take. He said Anthony Davis is the first guy he's ever seen guard two guys in the pick and roll at the same time, literally. He shut down the other guy who's trying to roll, and the other guy who's going to look to shoot, he blocked his shot. I've seen it. Look it up on YouTube, guys. That's how special defensively he is. And it's kind of shocking to me, now that he's in his eighth season. I've been watching Anthony Davis since he was at Kentucky in 2012. I saw a special defensive player he was. That's how he became first known, his defense. Like, he's so special defensively, he's crazy. He was compared to Kevin Garnett, Bill Russell coming out of college. So we knew he was special defensively. But yeah, man, Anthony Davis, he's really deserving of this award, the first team. And I'll be shocked if he doesn't win the Defensive Player of the Year award in his career. It'll be like Tim Duncan, one of the greatest defenders of all time, to never win one Defensive Player of the Year. That's insane, and that's ludicrous. He's very deserving. But I expect him to win at least one or two in his career. And we'll see what happens, man. But yeah, man, these are the all defensive teams. And I don't really have anything wrong with it. I'm fine with all the names on those lists, and everybody's very deserving. So yeah, these are the all defensive teams of the 2019-2020 NBA season.
And lastly, the highly coveted annual All-NBA Award teams, where they announced the 15 best players of any given season, the All-NBA first team, second team, and third team. All right, so we're going to go through them. The All-NBA teams. All-NBA first team at the guard spots, you have Luka Doncic of Dallas Mavericks, James Harden of the Houston Rockets, LeBron James. And to the front court spots, you got LeBron James and Anthony Davis, two Lakers, and you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, the reigning league MVP and Defense Player of the Year, to round out the first team. The second team, you have Chris Paul of the Oklahoma City Thunder, Damian Lillard of the Portland Trail Blazers, and on the front court, you have Kawhi Leonard of the Clippers, Pascal Siakam of the Raptors, and Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. And then the backcourt of the third team, you have Ben Simmons of the Sixers, Russell Westbrook of the Houston Rockets, Jimmy Butler of the Miami Heat, Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, and Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz. So those are the All-NBA teams for 2019-2020 NBA season. I don't really have a problem with the first team at all. There was a lot of omissions of the All-NBA teams. You could have said Bradley Beal, who had a tremendous season. Trae Young, who put up great numbers, but their teams didn't win. They didn't even make the playoffs. So I can get where the voters went in that regard, where their teams, but they didn't get selected on any of the NBA teams because the lack of wins and leading their teams to victory and making the playoffs. Making the playoffs is a big factor in making the NBA teams. Yes, you can put up great numbers, but if you're putting up empty stats, it's not going to matter to the voters. They want to see those stats being translated to wins. What are you doing to help your team win? And that's what it all comes down to. Winning takes care of everything. It's like they always say, winning takes care of everything. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with the first team. Luka Doncic had probably the best second-year season we've ever seen since LeBron James, arguably better statistically. So he led them to the seventh seed in the Western Conference as their best player, no doubt about it. And he was only turning 21 this year. And he has potential to be one of the greatest players of all time and probably either him or Giannis, if they continue on the current trajectory and improving their games and win championships, they're going to win. Giannis already has multiple MVPs. Luka's on his way to win a couple. And if they win championships, they can go down as the greatest international players of all time. Like, it's crazy how good these two are. Luka Doncic had no doubt about it, making All-NBA first team. James Harden put up historic numbers. Yes, during the playoffs, he might not be at like he is during the regular season. He might not be playing at his optimal level, his very best, but during the regular season, he continues to do what he's doing, breaking records offensively and showing why he's one of the greatest scorers the league has ever seen and arguably the greatest offensive player in the NBA, outside of Kevin Durant, in my opinion. LeBron James, record-breaking 16 All-NBA teams for his career, breaking the tie between Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and his 13th All-NBA first team selection, which is a new NBA record. Salute to the king, man. He continues to defy the odds, defy science and physics, and the way he's been taking care of his body, putting in over $1 million every year to take care of his body, shows the dedication he has and the mindset he has to continue to prolong his career, and it's just amazing what he's been doing. So props to him. And then Giannis and Anthony Davis round out the first team. Giannis, I feel like he just had better numbers this year. I don't feel like he really added anything to his game, like post-game-wise or jumper. He needs to add those things. But he still had a dominant regular season. He dominated in the statistical categories and leading his team to the best overall record in the entire NBA. If the season didn't shut down, maybe the Lakers could have caught them. But they were on pace to win 70 games this season if it was a normal year. But so you got to give him credit for that. And he's the sole superstar on that team. Chris Middleton's a nice player, but he's not a superstar. And he's probably not even a really legit second option on a championship team. So you got to give Giannis credit for helping his team become the best, have the best record in the NBA. And then Anthony Davis, he wasn't running for MVP. Probably him and LeBron probably took votes away from each other. But man, and he was running up in Defense Player of the Year. Anthony Davis had a tremendous season. It's his first time. I think people are really starting to see Anthony Davis because he's on a team that's on Lakers, who are a big brand, one of the biggest brands in sports and in basketball. And you're finally seeing him on the big stage and winning. So you see him more on national TV. You're seeing more of what he's capable of doing. And it's like we saw in game two when he hit that buzzer beater against the Denver Nuggets. He straight up dogged that game. Him and Jokic going at it. You've seen him on a big playoff performance, big stage, national television, every game nationally televised. And you've seen what he's capable of going down. He's going to go down as one of the greatest players and power forwards of all time. Once he gets a couple rings, man, I think it won't be hard to argue. I think he has potential. Anthony Davis go down as the second greatest power forward of all time behind Tim Duncan. That's how talented I think this man is. He needs to get an MVP, I believe, and a couple championships. But I think he has the talent to be the second greatest power forward of all time, and that's saying something. With guys like Bob Pettit, Karl Malone, Garnett, Dirk Nowitzki, he's that great. He's better defensively than all those guys I named except for Garnett. Garnett is right on par with him. But yeah, first team, I have no problems with the first team. Everybody on the first team deserved it. So the second team, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Siakam, and Jokic. Second team, Chris Paul. Nobody saw the Thunder making the playoffs. Nobody. Like 0% chance making the playoffs. And they forced the Rockets to 7 games in the first round. Gotta give props for him for that. He led that team. That team doesn't have that much great talent. It's just him, really, and you have a solid center, Steven Adams, and a rising star, and say Gilgeous Alexander. But other than that, there's not crazy talent on that team, and he willed them into a 6th seed into the Western Conference. So he deserved to make the NBA second team. Damian Lillard had another tremendous season. He had put up great numbers. He willed his team to make the playoffs in the bubble. Even though all these were voted before the bubble play, he deserved it, putting up historic numbers. He had 2 60-point games this season. That shows you how dynamic offensively he is when he gets hot. Kawhi Leonard, I mean, he missed games this season. He low-managed, and it bit him in the back and his team in the playoffs against the Nuggets, but he had a decent, solid regular season. He's not really known for putting up great numbers in the regular season, but yeah. He deserved to make it on base second team because the Clippers were one of the best teams in NBA. So, yeah. Pascal Siakam, Raptors, took another jump this season. He missed some time with an injury, but he put up decent number. Solid, great. He improved his points per game, rebounds. He improved his all-around game to become a number one option. In the playoffs, he struggled being that number one option. Maybe he's more suited to be a number two option, but he showed what he's capable of. Being a number two option and leading his team to victory and leading them to the number two team in the Eastern Conference. So that says something because nobody saw the Raptors being a top team in the Eastern Conference, especially when Kawhi Leonard left. So big props to him. Nikola Jokic, he struggled in early part of the season. He looked out of shape. Man, This playoff Jokic, man, he's real, man. He's so talented. He's arguably the best passing big man the league's ever seen. He's in that discussion with Bill Walton, Arvydas Sabonis. Look him up, guys. He was legit. He was legit. And the Gasol brothers and Chris Webber. Jokic had a struggling first half of the season, but in the second half of the season, he started coming alive. And now you're seeing it in the playoffs and in the bubble. So he deserves second team. Now the third team, this is where the debating begins. People are saying Trae Young deserved all NBA third team over guys like Westbrook and Ben Simmons, and Bradley Beal also deserved a nod, and that Embiid should have been third team over Rudy Gobert. Ben Simmons, his numbers offensively are not that great. He's not a scorer. He's not an offensive player. But I think he made the All-NBA third team because his defense and the way he impacts the game for the Philadelphia 76ers. You saw how bad they were in the playoffs because Ben Simmons was out, how badly they got swept by the Celtics. I think that played a factor, but that was before. That was during the seeding games, but during the regular season. He needs to improve his jump shot, but he really makes his teammates better. He rebounds the ball well. He has a high IQ, and he's a great defender. But I could see a number. I could see a reason why Trae Young, people want to put Trae Young, but they were one of the four worst teams in the entire NBA, so I get why he didn't make All-NBA team. And Bradley Beal, the Wizards are god-awful, but he averaged over 30 points per game, so I wouldn't mind if Bradley Beal was on the All-NBA team over Ben Simmons. And Bradley Beal, man, the hate this dude gets. He's the first player, I think, to ever average over 30 per game and not make All-NBA third team or an All-NBA team or All-Star team in the same season. The straight disrespect. So, in that regard, Russell Westbrook, he struggled during the first half of the season. He didn't really come alive until before COVID hit, like January, February, he started coming alive. I feel like he's regressed a little bit. His jump shot's been struggling. He's not as athletic as he used to be. If you guys still think he is, then you're obviously blind. If you watch him closely, he's not as athletic as he used to be, but he still is an integral part of the Houston Rockets offense and helped them become one of the top five seeds in the Western Conference. And he's a triple-double machine on any given night, so yeah. And you could also argue for front court, Bam Adebayo over Rudy Gobert, too. Like Jimmy Butler, him and Bam Adebayo. Nobody saw the Heat making the Eastern Conference Finals. And those two, nobody saw the Heat even being as good as they were this season, being a top four team in the Eastern Conference. Jimmy Butler has helped push his teammates to be the best version of themselves. And Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, Duncan Robinson, and so forth. And led them to be to a winning record. And nobody saw the Heat doing what they're doing this season. So Jimmy Butler deserved to make the All-NBA team. Even though he doesn't have the gaudiest of stats, what he does intangibly wise and on defense and coming up big in clutch moments, making the right play or getting a big bucket for his team is why he made the third team. Jason Tatum, he deserved it. Celtics, he took the jump from potential star to legit star this season. If he continues to improve and put better stats, like his points per game, gets like 25 points per game, if he can get to that level, like he's doing in the playoffs, averaging over 24 a game, he'll make All-NBA teams for years to come, and he'll be in and improve his playmaking. He'll be in the running for MVPs for years to come if he improves those things. But yeah, he deserved the All-NBA third team. He was clearly the best player in the Celtics all season. He made that jump. When he saw him in February against the Lakers, when he dropped like 40 on them before the pandemic stoppage of the NBA, man, when I was watching that game, I was like, yo, this guy's crazy. The Tatum hype went out of control. People were saying he's the best young player in the NBA. Yes, he's in that discussion. Yes, he is. He might not be on Luka's level yet, but he's coming, ladies and gentlemen. He's only 22. He just turned 22 in March. And he has had playoff success in his career. It's just like, what, the third time he's reached the East, or second time in his young three-year career, he's reached the East Conference Finals in his career. So big props to him. And this time he's the leading man. So you got to give props to that. Rudy Gobert. And Donovan Mitchell also got snubbed. I believe he should have made it over Ben Simmons or Russell Westbrook. I would love to see him have made it. But this is a regular season award. It's not a playoff award. So that's probably why. He played better in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. Rudy Gobert, dominant defensively, makes a big impact on his team. Not the best offensive player, but what he does on the defensive end and rebounding-wise, he helps the Utah Jazz win games. So you got to give him credit for that. But snubs include like Trae Young, Bam Adebayo, another integral part of the Heat, and him and Jimmy Butler being the two all-stars on that team helped those team win games. Bradley Beal got snubbed. It's also, people say Chris Middleton. I don't believe he deserved it. And other guys. But it just shows how much talent there is in the NBA. And it's crazy to believe, man, how much talent. We have guys in their primes, young up-and-comers, guys featured in the league, making these All-NBA teams, and like Tatum, Giannis, and Luka. Young veterans, superstars like LeBron and James Harden and Westbrook and Chris Paul. And then you got guys in their prime like Lillard, Anthony Davis, and Kawhi. So the league's in great hands, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen next season. It's just going to get tougher making All-NBA teams because you got superstars coming back healthy like KD, Kyrie, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. So it's just going to get harder, man. But yeah, these are the All-NBA teams, and I don't really have a problem with these All-NBA teams. I believe everybody that made it deserved to make it. So even though the third team has some questions, I believe Bradley Beal should have got some deserving, probably over Ben Simmons or Westbrook or Bam Adebayo over Rudy Gobert. But other than that, I had no problems with it.
But next up, we're going to get into some NFL news. And man, there's been a lot going on in the NFL. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Looks like they picked the wrong getaway driver.
They'll be paying for this for a long time.
They will. But with accident forgiveness, Allstate won't raise your rates just because of an accident, even if it's your fault.
Cut! Sonny.
Is that good?
Line!
The desert never lies.
Isn't that what I said?
No, you were talking about Allstate and insurance. Let's try again. Everybody back to one.
Accident forgiveness from Allstate. Click or call for a quote today.
But now let's get into NFL Week 2 takeaways, man. Yo. That Cowboys-Falcons game, man, that was something else, bro. The Cowboys were down 20-0 in the first quarter. Matt Ryan, they were making it look like Joe Montana. That's how dynamic that offense was looking. He was throwing touchdowns all over the place from Calvin Ridley to open up the game, and Hayden Hurts to open up the game. Two touchdowns they scored. The Cowboys, in the first quarter alone, had three fumbles. Couple of fumbles, two of them by Ezekiel Elliott, and one by a sack by Dak Prescott where he ended up losing the ball and the defense recovering. And they had two turnovers on punt returns on downs. That was absolutely unacceptable. One of the first punt return, failed punt return, was Jones trying to throw the ball to the intended wide receiver target, and he ended up dropping the ball, and then you started hearing the boos in the crowd. And then you heard the other one, I think it was later in the game, I don't think it was the first quarter, but they tried to run the ball for 1 yard or two, and they failed to even achieve that. They were absolutely terrible in the first quarter, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Falcons were eating them alive. But then as the game progressed, you started seeing them attack the running game more. Dak Prescott trying to get Ezekiel Elliott going. And then when he scored his first touchdown, you heard the rage and frustration in his yelling when he scored that touchdown. And then he started seeing Ezekiel Elliott going, getting a couple yards each carry, helping propel them and get a rhythm going offensively. And then Dak Prescott started getting his passing game going, throwing to Dante Schultz, whatever his name is. And then that big big-time throw to Amari Cooper for a big gain. Was a 58-yard throw, it was, that helped them gain momentum and get the game closer within the 29-23 in the third and 4 minute mark of the third quarter. And then the Falcons wouldn't go away. Matt Ryan was continuing to find guys. Hayden Hurts was a beast all game. He's a beast tight end, man. The Cowboys defense was struggling a bit, but man, in the first quarter though, they really helped them contain the game, because the defense could have let up and said, yo, we're getting killed, man. This ain't a game. No way we're coming back.
But after the first two touchdown drives that the Falcons had during the first quarter, the Cowboys defense at least prevented them from getting scoring two more touchdowns, forcing them into two field goal kicks. 3 points is better to give up than giving 7 points. So the defense, you got to give respect to the defense in that regard and coming up big for the Cowboys and near the end of the first quarter and stopping the Falcons from getting two touchdown drives, which would have pushed the game out even further and made it harder for the Cowboys to come back and end up winning the game. But in the second half, the Falcons really let up, man. They let up a 20-0 lead and let the Cowboys come all the way back and win the game. Man, I'm not going to lie. The Falcons, Matt Ryan did his part. He had 4 touchdowns. He was really efficient, man. He had 4 touchdowns and completed 24 of his 36 passes for 273 yards. Todd Gurley, he was doing okay. He didn't really do anything. He had 21 carries for 61 yards. Julio Jones wasn't really looking like himself. He could tell he was dealing with a hamstring injury. He was dropping passes. He only had 2 receptions for 24 yards. But Calvin really carried them. He had 2 touchdowns, 109 yards on 7 receptions. Hayden Hurst had 72 yards, 5 receptions, 1 touchdown. And Russell Gage had 1 touchdown for 6 receptions and 46 yards. But you got to give the Cowboys credit for not giving up and showing resiliency in that regard. Dak Prescott had 450 yards, completed 34 of his 47 passes for 1 touchdown. God, I'm going to give him and Zeke credit, just like they get the criticism, because Dak Prescott emphasized the running game for Zeke Elliott for him to get warmed up and start getting their offense going. And that Prescott got the passing game going for his whole team to get in a rhythm offensively to help put pressure on the Falcons and make it a ball game for them. Because in the beginning, it looked like this game was long gone and over. But he was finding guys all over the place, and he himself rushed for 3 touchdowns to take pressure off his wide receivers because he couldn't find them wide open every single time. So he just tried to get in the end zone himself, which helped his team. So I'm giving credit for that. CeeDee Lamb made some nice big catches to create extra possessions for them, extra first downs. Amari Cooper did his thing. Schultz did his thing. And you got to give them credit, give them extra chances to get extra possessions to get within the end zone and help them score and get into the game more. But, man, what about that onside kick, guys? That was probably the greatest onside kick recovery of all time. As the rule states in the NFL, you have to let the ball pass 10 yards before the team that kicks it is able to get the onside kick. And they let the ball pass. The Falcons, there was 5 players around the ball. I was watching the game. 5 players around the ball, the Falcons. They could have easily just hopped on the ball, taken the ball, and it would have been game. But no, the Cowboys ended up getting the ball, and the Falcons blew the game. They literally blew a 20-0 lead. The Cowboys ended up not being able to get a touchdown, but they ended up within field goal range for their kicker, who did an amazing job coming up clutch for them. He kicked the ball through the field goal and ended up winning the game for them. And one of the craziest comebacks in games of all time. But, yo, like, I'm not even surprised. When I was listening to First Take and, like, shows like First Take and Undisputed, I'm not even surprised. The Falcons choked a big lead. We've seen this, man. In the Super Bowl in 2017, when they played Tom Brady, they were up, what, 28-3? Had a 25-point lead and blew it. So, like, this team's had its chances in the past to win games, and they've blown it. They've done it themselves. And just like the Clippers last week, blown a 3-1 lead, they blew a 20-0 lead. You can't defend it any way, shape, or form. It's a choke job by them. So, in that regard, they choked. Straight up choked. And Michael Gallup made a big-time catch also. Give him credit. Made a big-time catch for the Dallas Cowboys to push the score 39-36, and then they end up making the field goal 37. Because if he didn't make that catch, the game would have been over. In football, it's different. The clock, you see, if you guys witness the clock never stops unless it goes out of bounds or a 2-minute warning or a flag. Other than that, the clock keeps ticking. The time keeps going. It's not like basketball where the clock stops. It keeps ticking and ticking. So it's more pressure on you to make the right play and to not waste any possessions. That's why football is so hard, because that clock keeps ticking, man. It's going to keep going. It's going to keep going, man. He's going to keep going, man. The kicker, man. That kicker really came up clutch for them, though. He really helped them win that game, man. Zerlin, whatever his name is, he came up clutch for them, man. If it wasn't for him, they would have lost the game. They would have lost the game, man. He won that game for them. And you got to give him credit where credit's due, man. That Dallas Cowboys game is arguably the greatest comeback of all time. Book it. But now, let's talk about that Seahawks-Patriots game, man. Cam Newton versus Russell Wilson, man. This game was something, bro. Both teams played great. Russell Wilson, he just straight up manipulated the whole Patriots defense. He was so efficient. He had crazy Hail Marys to David Moore for a touchdown. Oh, my God. Tyler Lockett, you name it. DK Metcalf, who's looking like he's going to be one of the next best wide receivers in the entire NFL in just his second season. He looks like he'd be an all-pro this season if he continues to be producing at the way he's been producing, man. But Russell Wilson, man, he already has 9 touchdowns for the season and over 500 yards. And he's been so efficient in his play. And they're 2-0 right now in their record. It's hard to believe that this man has not won an MVP in his career already. Like, he's that amazing, bro. He's that amazing. Cam Newton didn't play, he was no slouch either, man. Like, this game was close. It was within a touchdown. Russell Wilson had 288 yards, 5 touchdowns, only 1 interception, and completed 21 of his 28 passes. Like, bro, put respect on this man's name, bro. Chris Carson had 17 carries on 72 yards. DK Metcalf had 4 receptions, 92 yards for 1 touchdown. Tyler Lockett, 7 receptions, 67 yards for 1 touchdown. David Moore, 3 receptions, 48 yards, 1 touchdown. And he threw to Chris Carson and Freddie Swain. Like, Russell Wilson, man, he straight up dogged their team, bro. Dogged their team. He's so smart in his approach to the game. And I love how he avoids tackles and protects his body to avoid pain on his body throughout the season. So later in the season, he's fresh and ready to go to help potentially lead him to a deep playoff run. They're always in the hunt, in the running and hunt to win, be one of the best teams in the NFL. But Cam Newton, yo. Cam Newton, guys, ladies and gentlemen, Superman has returned. He had completed 30 of his 44 passes. His passing looked like it's gotten so much better from his younger days. He's finally healthy for the first time in 2 years. He threw for 397 yards, almost 400 yards, for 1 touchdown and 1 interception. And he rushed for 2 touchdowns. There was a questionable play at the end of the game. Questionable decision making by Bill Belichick and that offensive coordinator to go for that play during that time, but we'll get into that soon. But yeah, Julian Edelman had 8 receptions for 179 yards. It seems like him and Julian Edelman during those workouts in offseason have really paid out and have really panned out because they're connected on a deep level. I see him throw to him more than anybody else, and they seem to be on the same page. That chemistry is really boiling and developing. N'Keal Harry had 8 receptions for 72 yards. Damian Bird had 6 receptions for 72 yards, and so on and so forth. That defense was pretty good, but Russell Wilson carved them up, man. Him and Patrick Mahomes, those two players seem on a different level from everybody else in terms of their IQ and be able to read everything the defense is throwing at them. Jonathan Jones had 7 tackles. John Simons had 5 tackles. And multiple players have 3 tackles. And Stephon Gilmore, Adrian Phillips, Kyle Duggar, and Brandon Copeland. Like, this Patriots defense is legit. You have all pros all over the place. It's just, like, it's insane. What Russell Wilson was doing against this defense, come on, bro. But yeah, at the end of the game, they decided to run the ball. Cam Newton had 11 carries for 47, yards, had 2 touchdowns. But they tried to, and then it was 30-35, and then in the game, it was the last drive. They had a chance to win the game, and the Patriots blew it. They tried to run the ball from Cam Newton, but that defense of the Seahawks, their elite defense, shut it down and prevented him from getting to the end zone, and they ended up winning the game. Who knows, maybe if they ended up throwing the ball, they would have got a touchdown and won the game. But that's something you go in the film room and you look at and you try to improve on for the next game. But yeah, man, Cam Newton looking like one of the best quarterbacks in the league again, bro. Salute to him. All the naysayers were saying he was done. He's proven the doubters wrong, man. And he's definitely going to be comeback player of the year as long as he stays healthy and lead the Patriots to win their division, their AFC. I believe they're in the NFC, I believe. But, yeah, they're going to win their conference, their division. And Russell Wilson, I put respect on that man's name. He's in the running for the MVP. He'll finish top 3 in MVP if he doesn't win it. The way he's been playing so far, he's been the best quarterback in the NFL. Over Mahomes, over Lamar Jackson, over everyone right now. He's been the best, and it's not even close.
Yeah, man. There's been a lot of NFL news. But I'm just going to go down quickly at some of the other games that went on this past weekend. So the Giants lost to the Bears, 17-13. Rams destroyed the Eagles, 37-19. Man, the Eagles are a mess. Carson Wentz, he has really, like, regressed. The coach, Doug Peterson, I think that's his name. Like, people are saying Carson Wentz is not coachable. They're saying why they traded Nick Foles. He was a coachable guy. Everybody liked him. There's a lot of noise going on in Philadelphia, man. And it's not good noise. They're now, what, 0-2 to start the season. The Rams looking like one of the best football teams in the entire NFL, looking like an elite defense. Once again, with Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald leading the way. Jared Goff is playing well. That team is 2-0 right now, and they're looking legit in a tough NFC. I think they're in NFC West, I believe. That's the toughest conference in the entire NFL. The Giants, man, they lost Saquon Barkley, but we're going to get into that soon because there was a lot of injuries this season, this past week in the NFL. Cowboys, like I mentioned earlier, that was a thriller. They won the game against Falcons, 40-39. Tom Brady versus the Panthers. People are saying, oh, Tom Brady, it was a overrated game on his part. People are overrating the win. The Panthers lost Christian McCaffrey, but we're going to get into that soon. He threw for 217 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. And completed 23 of his 35 passes. It wasn't a great game, but it got the job done. Leonard Fournette was tremendous. He had 12 carries and 103 yards for 2 touchdowns. And other guys chipped in. Mike Evans got a touchdown for them. 7 receptions for 104 yards. And they beat the Panthers 31-17. And they go on to 1-1 record. And the Panthers are 0-2 now. Teddy Bridgewater was no slouch himself for 367 yards. But he had 2 interceptions and completed 33 of his 42 passes. Christian McCaffrey had 18 carries, 59 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So the same, the Buccaneers get that much-needed win that they need. And we'll see how much better they get. They're still trying to find their chemistry, and it's going to take time. It's going to take time, man. 49ers, they obliterated the Jets 31-13. The Jets, by far, they're a disgrace. One of the worst teams in the NFL. It's not even close. They allowed the 49ers, who were ravaged by injuries in that game. They had like 3, 4, 5 players go down in that one game. And they still blew. They got crushed by the 49ers. Pretty much their B-list team. They allowed a 30-31 conversion for a first down to the 49ers. For the 49ers, their B-squad, basically. Backups, absolutely horrendous. Steelers won 26-21. Titans 33-30 on the Jaguars. Packers destroyed the Detroit Lions 42-21. And Rodgers had a decent game. 22 for 240 yards. Completed 18 of his 30 passes and 2 touchdowns. They go on 2-0 for the season. The Lions are now 0-2. Bills defeat the Dolphins 31-28 to go 2-0 in the season. Josh Allen's looking like he's taking that next step, but still very early in the season. He completed 24 of his 35 passes, 417 yards, and threw for 4 touchdowns with no interceptions against the Dolphins. It's against the Dolphins, though, so we have to take it with a grain of salt. Even though it's professional sports, it's still against one of the worst teams in the league. The Colts versus Vikings, the Colts won 28-11. Vikings are struggling, man. They look like one of the worst teams in the NFL, too. They can't score any points. They're having trouble offensively. They're, like, offensively challenged. Ravens won 33-16 on the Texans, who are now 0-2. Deshaun Watson had 1 touchdown, threw for 275 yards, 1 interception, and completed 25 of 36 passes. He just doesn't have enough help, man. And I knew this team was going to... I knew, I said it from the very beginning. If you listen to my NFL kickoff episode and other episodes before that when he signed the extension, I knew he was going to struggle. He has no great wide receivers on his team, and they're pretty much struggling as a defensive unit. They allowed the Ravens score 33 points in the game, and Ravens are now 2-0. Lamar Jackson had a normal game. It wasn't, like, his best game, but he had 204 yards, 1 touchdown, and completed 18 of his 24 passes, and he rushed for 54 yards on 16 carries. The Chiefs won the game 23-20 against the Chargers, who are now 1-1, Chiefs 2-0. Mahomes had an average game, which is pretty shocking, because they only scored 23 points. They usually get in the 30s. He had 302 yards with 2 touchdowns, completed 27 of his 47 passes, and he rushed for 54 yards on 6 carries. It wasn't his outstanding Mahomes game that we're used to, accustomed to seeing, because we've become spoiled to seeing how great Mahomes is. But man, this rookie Justin Herbert was looking legit. He was looking legit. The Chiefs had to come back to win the game. But yo, this guy Justin Herbert is legit, man. To come... He didn't know he was starting until 5 minutes before the game. And to do that, what he did against the defending champions of the league is straight up amazing. He threw for 311 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, and completed 22 of his 33 passes. He was looking like a legit star out there. We're going to see how they should start him now with the recent news that came out with Tyrod Taylor. We're going to get into that real quick soon. But... yeah, man, Justin Herbert, there's no question about that. He should be the starting quarterback of that team, and he's the future of that franchise. So, yeah, there's no question about it. He's their future. The Patriots and Seahawks, like I mentioned earlier, Seahawks won 35-30. That was an amazing quarterback duel by Wilson and Cam Newton. And last but not least, the Saints and Raiders. Raiders won, surprisingly, Monday Night Football 34-24. The Saints, Drew Brees looked like he was struggling. He didn't look like Drew Brees out there. You could tell maybe it's age. He's not as good as he used to be. Him and Tom Brady, they're both in their 40s. They're two of the oldest players in the league. One's 41 and Drew Brees, 43 and Tom Brady. But he threw for over 300 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, and completed 26 of his 38 passes. But you could tell their offense was severely lacking without their best wide receiver and Michael Thomas. They severely missed him on the offensive end. They were struggling to put up points against the Raiders defense. And Alvin Kamara, he rushed for 2 touchdowns, 79 yards on 13 carries. But on the receiving end, there was no guy that really stood out. Emmanuel Sanders only had 1 reception for 18 yards. What's his name? Ty Montgomery. He only had 2 receptions for 25 yards. Alvin Kamara had 9 receptions for 95 yards. But nobody really was scoring the ball in the passing game. And that's why Michael Thomas, he's not just a wide receiver. He's known as the best wide receiver in the entire NFL. That's who you're missing. A no doubt best top wide receiver in the NFL. So, of course, it's going to hurt your offense. But the Raiders, Derek Carr threw for 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, 282 yards. And completed 28 of his 38 passes. Gotta give credit when credit's due. But yeah, there's questions about Drew Brees. Is he done? Like, it looks like he's not the same guy anymore. Him and Tom Brady. We have to wait and see, man. Maybe it's because of Mike Thomas being out. But when Michael Thomas comes back, we're going to see what happens and how that offense flows. And then Tom Brady, I want to continue to see how he does throughout the season, because a lot of people are starting to write off the Buccaneers as they're not Super Bowl contenders. But I want to give them more time, more chemistry. But man, also, Kyler Murray, the Cardinals, defeated the Washington football team 30-15. They go on 2-0 this season. He threw for one touchdown, one interception, completed 26 of his 38 passes, and threw for 286 yards. He's arguably the most nimble quarterback in the entire NFL. He's not as good as Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers. Those guys are above him, no doubt. But Kyler Murray, he's starting to get into that top 10 quarterback category. So give him his props and his respect, because he's helping his team win ball games now that he has more throwing options and one of the best wide receivers in DeAndre Hopkins. And now he's made major improvements in his throwing game and reading the defense. Because once you're not a first-year player, the game slows down for you. If you realize, like, after a few years in the league, it slows down for you. You're not going as fast. You understand the game a little better. You have more reps, more experience. And that's what Kyler Murray's showing. And he's quickly becoming one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
But before we get into week two injuries, but I just want to quickly talk about, man, the Jets and Giants, man. New York, where have New York's parts gone, man? These two football, especially New York football, like, bro, these two teams suck. Like, straight up stink. The Jets are worse than the Giants, but the Giants are horrible, too. So that's saying something about the Jets. Man, yo. Like, yo, like, these teams really suck. And they've stunk for a while now. Sam Darnold, he's inconsistent. He shows flashes, but it's not consistent production we see from him, because his offensive line is so terrible. They don't do a great job of protecting him. I watched some of the highlights. Man, they really don't protect him. So I kind of get his scramble. Daniel Jones, he's made improvements, but he still has a long ways to go. And you got to ask yourself, if you're the GM of either of the teams, do you want to keep these quarterbacks who are still young and see what they can do this season? Or do you want to try tanking for the season, try to get one of the prize quarterbacks, and Trevor Lawrence, who's projected to be one of the best quarterback prospects in NFL, in recent NFL memory since Andrew Luck? And there's been only a couple quarterback prospects who were this hyped. John Elway, Andrew Luck, and now Trevor Lawrence. And he's projected to be a top 2-3 pick in the NFL draft, maybe even the number one pick. So if you're one of those two teams who are going to be at the very bottom of the league, you got to ask yourself, are you willing to tank for Trevor Lawrence? Are you willing to, if you're the Jets, are you willing to move on from Sam Darnold, who's now in his third season and really hasn't proven he could be a legit franchise quarterback in the NFL yet? Are you willing to move on from Sam Darnold and start over with Trevor Lawrence? Those are the questions they're going to have to answer and ask themselves throughout the course of the season. But now let's get into week two injuries, man, because, man, there are so many injuries this past NFL weekend, man. Like, it's from Saquon Barkley of New York Giants, the running back who tore his ACL, and he's the only marketable New York NFL football player currently in the NFL, is devastating blow to the Giants. And even though they didn't have a lot of expectations, now they're not expected to win probably any games the rest of the season. They're offensively challenged, and without their best player on the field, they're going to really struggle. Panthers running back also, Christian McCaffrey, has an ankle sprain, and he's going to be out for several weeks due to his ankle injury. And then he also had guys like Nick Bosa, who was in the running, a tremendous second-year player who had a tremendous rookie year, and the running for defensive player of the year. And now he's out with a torn ACL as well, just like Saquon Barkley. And it's just devastating, the injuries that happened this weekend. The Falcons, Caleb McGarry, he hurt his knee. He suffered a sprained MCL. Tack McKinley, defense end of the Falcons. These are the Falcons injuries. Injured his groin. Ricardo Allen, the safety, injured his elbow. Baltimore Ravens cornerback injured his knee. Tavon Young. Christian McCaffrey, lower leg injury, will be out for several weeks. And that's going to really hurt their chances to make a run for the playoffs. And that hurts their chances now. Drew Locke of the quarterback for the Denver Broncos hurt his shoulder, and he's expected to miss 2 to 6 weeks. Along with injuries to Cortland Sutton, wide receiver, hurt his shoulder and knee. Jermon Jones, defensive end, hurt his knee as well. And the Green Bay Packers wide receiver, star wide receiver, Devontae Adams hurt his hamstring, and he's going to be out for a little time. It just shows to go how many injuries have been. Raheem Mostert also got injured for the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo hurt his ankle, but that was kind of the way he got tackled. You knew that was going to happen. And there was so many injuries. It was just ravaging all over the place. It's just Tyrod Taylor with his chest. And we're going to get into that in a second, because there was reports that a doctor tried to give him a painkiller for his chest, and it punctured his lung. We're going to get into that quickly soon. But yeah, man, the injuries that were suffered during this NFL past weekend was devastating for the league. Also on the Giants, Sterling Shepard, wide receiver, hurt his toe, and he probably has turf toe, which is very, very painful. For those who ever played football or played in the NFL, know what turf toe is. So, yeah, man. New York Jets wide receiver Breshad Perriman hurt his ankle, and he'll be out. And his status for week 3 is uncertain. Connor McGovern, center, hurt his hamstring, and he'll be out. The 49ers probably had the biggest blow of any team. They went from being in the Super Bowl to now potentially not even getting past the first round, or they're not going to win the division. Nick Bosa's out, like I said, with a torn ACL. Jimmy Garoppolo hurt his right ankle sprain, and he won't be able to play in week 3. Raheem Mostert had a mild MCL sprain in his knee. You got to be very careful with those, because those could lead to torn ACLs. Solomon Thomas, defensive tackle, he also torn his ACL. It's just devastating, man. Devastating, absolutely devastating. All the injuries that I ever suffered this past weekend. And it goes to show you, like, preseason, the preseason's going nowhere in the NFL. The preseason, and with the lack of preseason and OTAs and the way the turfs are made, a lot of NFL players complain about playing on turf because it's rough and hard and it's like concrete. They like grass because it's easier, more elusive. You can move better and it's easier to run on it and play on it. But turf is harder. But yeah, with the lack of OTAs and preseason, these guys didn't really get in the best shape. Their bodies weren't used to the mileage they put on their bodies now, because they didn't have the regular offseason they needed to get their bodies accustomed to what was going to come during the season. So that goes to show you how important the preseason is, OTAs and training camp, because they didn't have much time to really prepare and fully get their bodies ready for the high demands of the contact they were going to take during the regular season. So the NFL has a lot of things to fix. I know this offseason was abnormal, and hopefully things are normal next year, but it goes to show you that the preseason is very important to get your body in shape and get used to game action and use getting your body to tolerate the hits that you're going to take during the regular season and in the playoffs. Because, man, I hope we don't have another weekend like this. A lot of star players went down, and it's going to hurt the league a bit in the ratings. But this just in, breaking news, quarterback of the Los Angeles Chargers, Tyrod Taylor, has a doctor accidentally punctured his lung while trying to administer a pain-killing injection into his body for his chest injury and he cracked his ribs in week 1. And I feel bad for him, man. As they said, it's not career-threatening, and they said the doctor just made a mistake, according to ESPN sources, Adam Schefter. And I just hope he recovers, and he's going to be out indefinitely until he's fully 100%. The team loves Tyrod Taylor, all his teammates respect him, and that they have to trust in him, and they believe he's productive and reliable quarterback. But now with this injury, I think Justin Herbert's going to be able to show what he's got. But I think that's a shame on the doctor's part in accidentally puncturing a guy's lung. The injection he received for his lung is not uncommon, but it carries a risk because the doctor injects without seeing where the needle was going, and then accidentally punctured his lung. And it's rare that a player often suffers a punctured lung from an injection. So we'll see where that goes, and I hope he makes a full recovery and back to the NFL. But next up, we're going to get into some quick hitters, MLB, a new league. And then we talk about a little bit on the NHL and give my condolences to the all-time great running back Gale Sayers. Before that, take a quick break.
time to play some baseball.
Baseball?
Yep.
I can do baseball.
We can play baseball?
I'm in.
If we can play anything.
Four.
I'm in.
Seriously.
Anything.
Put me in, coach.
Sign me up, dude. I'm not picky.
So Gale Sayers, I want to give my condolences to Gale Sayers, one of the former running backs of the Chicago Bears and one of the greatest running backs in NFL history. Passed away today, sadly, at the age of 77. He was the youngest to ever be inducted into the Hall of Fame at the age of 34. I just want to give my condolences. He was known as an extraordinary man who overcame a great deal of adversity during his NFL career and his life. And he was one of the greatest players, and he made an immediate impact when he was drafted in 1965 by the Chicago Bears. He was named NFL Rookie of the Year after scoring 22 touchdowns and 132 points that were both records at the time. And he's considered a top five running back in NFL history. He was named to four Pro Bowls, where he was named Offensive Player of the Game three times, selected first team All-Pro five times, and was named NFL Comeback Player of the Year in 1969 after tearing his ACL and MCL in his right knee. And that takes guts to do that. During those times when there was not advanced technology like we have today, come back from a major injury like that, that proves how tough he was. And he finished his career with 4,956 yards, 39 touchdowns, and an average of 5 yards per carry. He didn't play very long, but during his short term in NFL, his short 6-7 years, he dominated at his position. That's what makes him one of the greatest running backs of all time. And I just want to give my condolences to his family, his wife, his kids, grandkids, and everybody. And I hope they're all doing well. So now let's quickly get into hockey. So the Stanley Cup Series is tied 1-1. Dallas Stars took game 1, 4-1. On the Lightning, and then Tampa Bay Lightning came back on Monday and took game 2 to win the game 3-2. And now game 3 is tonight, and whoever wins game 3 is usually win the series in most sports. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen. What was I going to say? They're going to need some key players to step up for both teams to win this series. I'm not really a hockey expert. But according to ESPN, what's going on with Tyler Seguin, like they stated of the Dallas, like he needs to step up. They said, I think Alexander Rudolov and Ben should be together. Obviously, Radek Faxa is hurt. These are some hard names to say. But they'd rather have Faxa there than Seguin, because Seguin, to me, they said, isn't really doing much. He's just skating fast and skating hard. Skating fast, skating hard, and being engaged are different things. Just like on the basketball court, running fast and actually playing hard and making a difference are two different things. So we gotta watch out for that. The Steven Stamkos, who's been missing due to injury, there's a potential return for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he can make a big impact if he's able to return for them. They said before the last game, when the Tampa Bay power play was horrible, they weren't doing any low plays. They were all up top. And I would have liked to have seen a righty doing one-timers. Even if he isn't 100%, he can still stand there and show on the power play and be effective. As for 5-on-5 play, I would worry about him, especially in the center role. Conditioning is a big thing, but timing even more than conditioning, because these guys have been playing for 2.5 months now, and their timing is key. Conditioning is, like they said on the ESPN article, conditioning is big in the sense that top players take long shifts. Top players generally create offense in the last 20-30% of their shifts, because they generally do hold on to pucks and create plays in the time frame when they've worn down their opponent. So he's not really going to be in the best of shape if he does return before the series is over. So it's going to be interesting if he does return, because his timing is going to be off and his conditioning is not going to be there. The guy they call Captain America, Joe Pavelski, he can't skate. They say he can't skate fast. He's not as fast as other guys, but he can still skate. He's very sturdy on the skates.
He can battle and stay on the edges really well, but his instincts are just out of this world, and he's able to read pucks and pick pucks off in the neutral zone and take them back on offense. And he's not only going to go back to get to an area to make a pass, but already knows where a guy's going, so he'll pick it off and make his play right away. So that frees up room for him because the play has been made so fast. So that's a good sign for them. And I feel like this is going to be a hard series because, like I said earlier in my last podcast, both these teams have a lot of talent. They're both very talented. It's just going to come down who wants it more, who's willing to make the game-winning play, who's willing to hustle, get that loose puck, find open teammates, make guys better, and who's going to come up in the clutch. That's what it comes down to. Not every game's a blowout. It's going to be hard to win games. You're going to have guys come up in the clutch and come up big. So that's a big time adjustment. And speaking of adjustments, the Tampa Bay Lightning made adjustments in game 2 after losing game 1. And like they said in the ESPN article, in the first game, the Stars were really pushing the Lightning defense to make mistakes. But Tampa Bay's D, they didn't like to rim pucks too much or throw pucks away. They like to make plays, and the Dallas forwards were really pressuring the Tampa Bay D to give up the puck. But Tampa Bay doesn't like to make the simple play, even though they do it better than they did last year. But that's why Dallas dominated in the first game, because they weren't pressuring them. And the Lightning D were turning pucks over. But in game 2, they made adjustments. They pressured the puck. They made them make plays outside of their comfort zone, and that's what propelled them to win the game. They scored early in the game, and they got confident on the power play, which helped them gain momentum during the game and seal game 2. And then now tonight's game 3 is going to be interesting who comes out on top and take a 2-1 commanding 2-1 series lead and get to gain the momentum in the series going into game 4. So now let's quickly get into baseball. The Dodgers clinched their 8th straight division title, clinching NL's top spot. They wrap up the NL West title in fashion, in a year in which no one was sure 3 months ago if there would be a baseball season, and they clinched their 8th straight NL's title with a 7-2 victory over the Oakland Athletics this past Tuesday, and they're the 3rd team to win at least 8 straight division titles, joining the Atlanta Braves, who did it 14 straight times from 1991 to 2005, and the New York Yankees, who did it 9 straight times during Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez era from 1998 to 2006. You gotta give big props when props is due, man. The Dodgers, who own the best record in the majors at 39-16, they were the first team in baseball to clinch a playoff berth on September 16th, and they will open postseason play on September 30th by hosting every game in a best-of-3 series against the number 8 seed. And speaking of the playoffs, so the matchups, I believe, will be the Rays versus Blue Jays in the American League, number 1 versus number 8 seed, Rays versus Blue Jays. Number 2, White Sox versus the Indians, number 7, Indians. Number 3, Athletics versus number 6, Astros. Number 4, Twins versus number 5, Yankees. And in the National League, it'll be number 1, Dodgers versus number 8, Brewers. Number 2, Braves versus number 7, Reds. Number 3, Cubs versus number 6, Marlins. And number 4, Padres versus number 5, Cardinals. And it's going to be interesting to see which team comes out on top. I hope the Yankees, me personally, being from New York, I just want to see the Yankees win. Even though I don't pay attention to baseball like that, I just think it'll be good for the state, considering how the Giants and Jets suck. And the Knicks are sorry. They both have stunk for years now. The Giants haven't been to the Super Bowl and won it since 2012. And the Brooklyn Nets are good, but they're not great yet. We have to wait and see what Kyrie and KD do. But I think it would be good for New York to have some happiness if they win the World Series. And that's what I want to see. So I hope that comes to fruition, but we'll have to wait and see. And then there was a statement from the MLB that came out earlier today that a new Atlantic League, it'll be in partnership with MLB, ALPB, and it's an extension of partnership on experimental rules and equipment. So the MLB announced today that it has named the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball its first partner league. And as its partner league, the ALPB will meet regularly with MLB to discuss joint marketing and promotional opportunities, including the league's shared goal of providing baseball to communities throughout the United States. It hopes to expand the current agreement between the leagues, which permits MLB to test experimental playing rules and equipment during Atlantic League games. The existing agreement has been extended through the 2023 season. So this is a good look for the MLB. So they have a league that can help them expand its rules. See, so if they want to implement new rules and new equipment, they have a league where they could have a test. Like, it's like a testing buddy. Like, just like when you have a doctor and they're trying to test out medicines, doctors and nurses and hospitals testing out different medicines, different vaccines on a testing buddy, see if it works correctly. That's basically what this is for the MLB. So in that regard, I think this is a good thing for them. And I think this will help benefit their league and help improve things within MLB and improve the game overall. But if you get to this point to the show, I thank you guys for listening. Thank you for those who continue to show support. And it's been your boy DJ Hamilton. See you guys next episode. Thank you.